I was in here last week, Dr. Schnitzelfoom, with this agonizing pain in my tummy. Just as though there was a huge imaginary screw in my navel. And you said I should go home and get an imaginary screwdriver and undo it. And the pain would go. Well, I done that. I unscrewed it ever so carefully and the pain did go, but
what happened?
My leg fell off.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddock and Joan Sims in...
No, stop messing about.
Hello and welcome all you lovers of the body beautiful. Yes, it's time to sit down, tune in, turn on, freak out, ease off.
Ease off.
Yes, it's the eighth wonder of the world, your own Kenneth Q. Williams.
What's the Q for?
What?
What's the queue for?
The Kenneth Williams Exhibition Lab in the foyer. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. All my bits and pieces are on display. Yes, out there is the actual bed on which I first saw the light. And the little Lord Fauntleroy suit I wore when I was two.
Two what?
Too young to know any better. Not to mention the teensy-weensy plastic raincoat with matching sou'easter.
You mean sou'wester?
No, I used to wear it sideways. Yes, it's all out there dominated by the life-size statue of my actual self. Oh, my base hasn't arrived yet, of course.
Well, never mind. Someday your plinth will come.
I don't have to stay here to be insulted. I can get that outside.
Well, I'm sick of all this Williams mania. The writer's unrolling the red carpet in front of him everywhere he goes.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. Oh, that a spineless lot.
Yes, you're right. Especially that Miles Cook.
I think you've mixed them up.
They were mixed up before I came along, love. What annoys me is the way the producer lays on all sorts of things for that Williams.
Oh, so I believe.
Yes, liveried chauffeur to pick him up every day. Mm. He looks a right Charlie, piggyback down Regent Street.
I heard that. And why not? Remember, I pull him in.
Yes, we're all grateful for it. The point is, I'm not getting my share.
And neither am I.
You two should get together. I ask for no more than is my due as an exceptionally lovely human being. Lovely. Can I help it if people adore me?
A door?
Yes, and I, Douglas Smith, am entering through it. Just in time to announce something for the connoisseur, as we make another cultural pilgrimage to the stately home of the Earl of Shotterley.
Purges all. I was hoping today to give you a detailed description of one of Lord Elgin's marbles. Yes. Which is housed in the Long Gallery and is a remarkably arresting statue of a discus thrower. But last week an important bit of him got knocked off. At the present he is hors de combat. And so's the parlour maid who was giving him the wash down at the time. I told her his discus was loose. But she wouldn't listen. I couldn't wait to get started. However, the Long Gallery has several other interesting items, one of which is her ladyship, who I see is dangling from the chandelier. What are you doing up there, Georgina? Come down at once.
I can't. The ladder fell down when I was dusting the lustre.
Oh, well, I dare say Figgins will be along in a minute. You'll just have to hang on.
I've been hanging on all morning.
And in this cold weather, you ought to wear something warmer underneath. Where was I? Oh, yes. Through this door here, we come to the king's bedchamber. Yes, nice. Where Henry VIII spent his wedding night on several occasions. Which may account for the four-poster bed only being 3.5. In the glass case in the corner is something of great historical interest, the king's nightcap, on which is embroidered the motto, Honi soir qui mal y pense, which means, good night, honey, it won't be as bad as you think. Now, as we descend the main staircase, I'm reminded of the words of the late poet laureate. I'm reminded of the words of the late poet laureate who wrote, if you can keep your head while others talk of this and that, you'll not only be a man, you'll have a place to put your hat.
And now it's Crackerjack and Nori with Mother Time. And here once again is Maud Nethersole.
Hello, Tinies.
And Biggies, too. Now today is How to Do It Day. And I'm going to tell you. We're going to learn how to make an Indian totem pole. To start with, go out and fell a medium-sized tree. Or, if you live in the town, a telegraph pole will do. But get rid of all the nasty wires round the top and any post office engineers who happen to be up at the time. Now, to decorate your pole, get a nice sheep's head from the butcher. Boil for about a week. The sheep's head, not the butcher. And you'll have the most delicious sheep soup, which you and your fellow braves can dip into when you're sitting round the campfire, smoking an old moccasin and making heap big wampum. Now, put the sheep's head at the top of the pole and underneath do a realistic carving of sitting bull or his squaw squatting cow. If you want to have a go at running bear, wait until the weather gets warm. Your pole is now ready for use. Put it in the middle of the lawn, stick a feather in your hair, and dance round it waving your little tomahawk and shouting, how? And perhaps Daddy will tell you the story of Minnie Ha Ha and how she came to be called Laughing Water. Next week, I'll tell you how to get a wigwam on the National Health. But now I think it's time for our song. Two little mice, or it may have been three, lived in a hole in a sycamore tree. Three little mice, or perhaps it was four, possibly even five. Hope very much not another mouse more would arrive. Five little mice, not so little at that. One in particular got very fat. Sent for the doctor who came round to call. Said it was even odds. It was all due to wind, but it wasn't at all. It was quads. Nine little mice, and with more on the way. Some intermarried, I'm sorry to say. Dozens of nappies that hung in the breeze. Hardly an inch to spare. Half an hour queue for the bath, if you please. And elsewhere. So some went to Hampshire and some went to Wilts. Some went to Scotland and bought themselves kilts. Till there were only the two little mice waving goodbye, and then they said to each other, how peaceful, how nice,
and start it all over again.
And now, a glimpse into the past with the feature we call Vardying Back. Today, we strip off the veils of mystery and intrigue that surround the life of a Secret Service agent.
Oh, hello, I'm 006, and this is my undercover friend and opposite number, 600.
Oh, hello! Oh, lovely!
Oh, how very Ipcrest to Vardy a confidential file.
Well, now, which of you chaps is going to strip off your veil first?
Chaps!
At Checkpoint Charlie.
Oh, there now, he's penetrated our disguise. I told you we should have worn thicker veils.
It's that gun holster of yours that's the giveaway.
What?
I keep telling you, wear it under your arm.
But I like it round here. It's more stylish. Besides, it keeps my secret transmitter warm. You never know when a message's going to come through.
Chance will be a fine thing. Nobody's been near our hotline for weeks. I was only saying to M the other day.
M?
Yes, our superior at the special branch, M. Short for Emma.
Very superior,
oh,
too.
Very.
Always coming, the madam. And so rude.
Forgive me interrupting, but I was hoping you'd tell us something about your actual work.
Oh, decent love, no. No. Dare. Official secrets, act, you know. I mean, all our acts are official secrets.
Yeah. I can assure you there's no one listening. I can prove it with last week's audience figure.
Yeah, are you sure the place isn't bugged?
No, we had it sprayed this morning.
Oh, it's nice. Thought it was his aftershave. Tell him, here, I tell you what, tell him
what?
About how a nameless foreign power nearly breached your securities.
Oh, I couldn't. I wouldn't dare.
Go on.
No.
Go on.
It's confidential.
Get it off your conscience. Go on.
No, I dare.
Get it off your conscience.
Well,
could do with the rest.
Oh, very well.
Yeah.
Well, look, I had this assignation, you see, with an American agent.
Tell him his name.
No,
go on.
No,
I can't. Go on. Oh,
no.
It was Cold Finger Clint. Wasn't it?
Yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes. Cold Finger Clint, yeah. Oh, they were, too. He was supposed to chat me up outside a certain foreign building covered with onion-shaped domes.
Now, the gents of Brighton.
Yeah. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, that wasn't the only thing onion-shaped, was it?
Not by long.
Not when you put that fur coat on.
No. Well, I was so cold, you see. I was wearing my teddy bear Ottibots as well. And concealed about my person, I'd had this roll of microfilm.
And tell him where you'd concealed it.
Oh, I can't.
Go on, I said at the time, that's the first place they're going to look.
Yes, you do.
Especially when they see the way he was walking.
I had it in my fur-lined boot, you see. Anyway, Clint was working under the code name of Doris.
Boris, not Boris! 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 Not Doris, your great nana.
Here, watch it. Well, any road up. Unbeknownst to me, he'd been captured by the other side.
They'd been grilling him for hours.
Any road, I was waiting for Clint at the appointed place.
Picture the scene, Ducky. I mean, him standing there in the blinding snow, and then this black limousine draws up, a furtive figure gets out, whispers the password.
Chitty, chitty, bang, bang.
But little did he know, it wasn't Clint at all.
Well, how could I tell under all that fur?
And did you give the microfilm to the wrong agent and divulge all our secrets to his enemy power, whose name I can't mention? Did you? Did you?
No, I didn't.
Was it because it was too cold to take off your fur-lined boot?
I know exactly.
Tell him! Tell him why you wouldn't take your boot off!
No.
Tell him why you wouldn't show your legs!
Well, my seams weren't straight.
But soft. Who is this? Who is this way out little group I see approaching? It's Peter, Paul and Mrs. Nosepoltice.
I've got soul, man. I've got soul too.
We all got soul this week. They run out of fried place.
How very distressing.
So we're going to sing you a soulful song that we picked up in a little mine in town.
In the Rhondda Valley.
Well, I'm sure your suspen bark is worse than your bite.
Oh,
oh, it's very clever, some of this stuff.
Hang down your head, Di Thomas. You have disgraced our choir.
By singing I'll Gather Lilacs
in the middle of Handel's Messiah.
What a disgrace, Di Thomas.
A terrible thing to do.
And after I'll Gather Lilacs, you thank Colonel Bogey too.
You'll have to go, Di Thomas. Better collect your hat.
It's not what you sang, Di Thomas.
It's because you were singing flat. It's because you were singing flat, flat, flat.
Once again, it's time for our film adaptation. This week, our Academy Award losing story of the ugly duckling of show business. Fanny Girl.
Shouldn't that be Fanny?
You can't win them all.
This is a story about the glitter, the glamour, the glotter, and the heartache of Broadway. Cricklewood Broadway. There in a fly-blown, run-down theatre, a fly-blown, run-down choreographer is trying out a new routine.
Yes, right, girls. Now, while you're dancing, I want you to hold your balloons in front of you. That's it. I say, you number five, you haven't inflated your balloons enough.
Balloons?
Yes, but never mind. Off we go. Music, maestro, please. All together, up and down. Oh, now that's the way. Lots of titillation. Kick with the right leg, kick with the left leg.
Ah!
Not both together, number five. Come over here. Oh, goodness, you are so ugly.
I can't do anything about that.
You could have stayed at home. What's your name?
Fanny Braces.
Yes, well, you're holding things up, Braces. I mean, you're all right in the big point number.
Well, I would be, wouldn't I?
Yeah. Especially with that nose.
Excuse me, madam, I'm Adam.
Said the old stage doorkeeper, unintentionally perpetrating a palindrome.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
That's all right, don't do it again.
No, madam, there's a gentleman without.
I'm not interested.
He's at the stage door. He said he was in the front stalls last night and was struck by you.
That nose again.
He sends you these, madam. They're roses.
Well, they never fit me, but it's a nice thought. I'll go and see him.
And so it was that Fanny met her stage door genie. Similar to a stage door Johnny, but with light brown hair.
Hello, my dear. My name is Nick Molefrenzy, well-known gambler, bad hat, letter to the trade, and part-time liververse knotter.
Oh, Nick, you're so suave and elegant. The top hat, the opera cloak, the bicycle clips, the plimsoll.
Fanny, there's something between you and I, and it's bigger than both of us.
It's my nose, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what can I do, Nick? Noses like this run in my family.
Doesn't matter to me, Fanny. Blow it, I say.
But Nick wasn't the only one interested in Fanny Braces. The next day at the theatre, she discovered a little card in her dressing room.
It was me. Yes, I am the famous impresario, Florence Ziegmeadow.
Oh, I've heard of you.
Yes.
You've produced Your Follies up and down Broadway for years.
Yes, I have. Well, why not? not? Listen, Fanny, you have a certain something. I've made many stars in my time, so I know it when I see it.
Yes.
Yeah. You can be a star, Fanny. I won't say you're pretty. I won't say you're ugly. You're in between. Pretty ugly. I shall put you into my new show.
Oh, this is my big chance, Nick. Can I pull it off?
You must, Fanny. You must. This is the role you've been waiting for.
I, Douglas Smith, play the role she's been waiting for. I'm brown and crusty and still warm from the baker.
Worries, oh, no stopping it.
I've been split and buttered and there's a lot of ham in me.
Say that again.
I'm quite fresh, as you'll find out if you bite me, and I'm wrapped in a napkin so I won't soil the tablecloth.
Mm, you were delicious, Douglas.
Thank you. There's another one like me in the oven.
Get on with it. Fanny's big opening night. Every seat in the house is filled with cognoscenti. So the audience is sitting on the floor. But backstage, Fanny is in a blue funk.
Oh, nice. It's Susan.
I'm so nervous, Mr. Ziegmeadow. And these costumes, they're so daring. What if I flop?
Oh, don't worry, dear. Get out there. Go on. You'll soon have them rolling in the aisles.
The show was a great success. The next day, the critics used such phrases as...
It's outstanding!
It knocks your eye out!
It swept the gallery off their feet!
Yes, they could talk of nothing but Fanny's nose.
I'm sick of it. I'm going to have it altered by a plastic surgeon.
Hence, perhaps, her most famous song.
Second-hand nose. Got a second-hand nose.
Yeah, thank you, dear. Thank you. That's very good. Thank you.
I'll let you know if she gets worse. She really does.
But Fanny still wasn't happy. Nick was again indulging his compulsion on the tables.
To stop it, Nick. You're knocking over the cruets. Stop rolling those dice.
I can't help it, Fanny. You see, no use, Fanny. There's only one thing we can do. We must get divorced.
But we haven't got married yet.
Two things.
But it was not to be, for at that moment, fate stepped in.
Yes, and they were my fate. And size 10 boots. Constable Seamus or Haberdashery. I've come to arrest yous, Nick, for embezzling to pay for your gambling debt.
And so, Nick went to the Nick... And Fanny sat on her chaise longue, alone, alone. Now, part, of course, from the inevitable Stop Messing About Ends with full orchestra.
Fanny's all her hooters, now minuter, she still looks homely. You'll hear the balls all cry, you're gonna see her.
F-A-N-N-Y, it is uncanny.
This is ugly, she's so ugly with that thrombosis. It's so upturned that with every sneeze
she pulls her picture head off,
blows her this and that off,
blows her picture head off in the ring.
Hey!
And so, this week's film adaptation screeches to a halt. The sound effect of ripping silk was from Mr. Paddock's private collection.
It's better in stereo.
And Kenneth Williams provided the rhubarb for the crowd scene.
Yes, well, I've got the green fingers, you see. Comes from wearing those cheap gold rings.
Be that as it may, oh. Here's Joan Sims.
With a word to those on honeymoon, you've left the radio on.
That was Stop Messing About with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddock, Joan Sims, and the Max Harris Group. The script was by Johnny Mortimer and Brian Cook and Miles Rudge. The producer was John Simmons.